a stew.
A pinch of salt and laughter too.
A scoop of kids to add the spice.
A dash of love to make it nice. And you've got
too many cooks.
Too many cooks.
Too many cooks.
Soup.
Everyone adds an extra scoop.
Mix an ounce of a smile so sweet.
A dash of cool to add the heat. And you've got
too many cooks.
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 Good morning, everybody. It's WMFO right here in Medford. It's Mike on the mic. I will be with you until 11 a.m. this morning. Got a couple of great guests coming in today. I'll tell you about those in a little bit. Right now, let's just play a little bit of classic Herbie Hancock. And I'll be back right after this. WMFO.
Train passed through, so we buried said the coins are made in people's pot. When looking for a woman to court and spy. Saw me mistrusting him, still acting kind. He saw how I worried sometimes, how I worried sometimes.
Okay, it's 9:06 in the morning. It's WMFO. I am Mike on the mic, and as I said before, I'll be with you here till 11 a.m., and I've got a bunch of great people coming in this morning, a couple of which are waiting downstairs for me to go get them. Mark Hurwitz and his dad, Les, are here, and you know what great stuff they bring to the table, so they'll be with us for the duration. And then around 9:30, 9:40, we're going to have our friends Destiny Curtis and Mike Costa, Destiny and Daddy, fondly known as, joining us from then until about 11 a.m. So, like I said, lots of good stuff going on. And for now, I want to start it off with something that's rather recent from our friend Keith Richards. He doesn't mess around. This is called Substantial Damage, WMFO.
Thank you.
everybody. It's WMFO.
Yeah, here I go.
That's right. Yeah, we're here.
Okay.
Totally here.
Not me.
No, you're not here.
I can't hear myself.
Oh, yeah? Well, that'd be good. Now can you?
I can hear myself.
See how powerful I am?
You're pretty powerful.
I have Mike on the mic.
You can lift like 100 pounds over your head. It's incredible.
100 pounds over my head.
Yeah.
Let me think on that. I'll get back to you. 9:20 in the morning on Saturday. It is April 9th. We've been waiting for April 9th for a while, you guys. Mark and Les Hurwitz are here. Hi, guys.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning, Les. Okay, we've got a big, a lot of stuff coming up today. First of all, I'd like to have Les do what he does best. Les, of course, is a musicologist and a concert pianist and a wonderful guest here on our WMFO show. And you've got something special today about some pianos that pretty much changed the world of music forever.
Exactly. Very quickly, for those of you who are listening, and which means for those of you who have nothing better to do, I would lovingly ask you to do nothing but listen, not because what I say is the beginning and the end of all history, but that way you'll benefit from what you actually hear, because what you're going to hear is rather unusual for most of you, I think. I'm going to be talking about three pianos, but pianos that are like no other pianos. The first of which we call the Siena piano. That's S-I-E-N-A. A piano based upon its location in terms of its being made in Italy by a piano maker in the town of Siena. This piano was made, we're not really terribly sure, but somewhere between 1799 and 1800. And it was made for a couple about to be married. First of all, let me tell you, very much of what I'm going to talk to you about can be considered, well, maybe it happened, maybe it didn't. It is such a convoluted tale, it's almost impossible to put together. And strangely enough, it's been left alone by more astute historians than me, probably to keep the legend aspect of it alive. It's an amazing and rather glorious story. Now, the piano has a kind of history that defies description. I'll go over a very little of it. It at one time ended up in the city of Jerusalem. At one time ended up underneath the hot sands of North Africa in 1942. It at one time had been covered with plaster and then extricated and resuscitated over a period of years, etc., etc., etc. It is still around. At this moment, I'm not sure where this piano is. You may be able to see it. You push a button and you can get answers today. The photographs of the Siena piano are absolutely beautiful. There is wood carving on it that tells us of the art of 19th century wood carving in Italy. It's just amazing. It's a beautiful instrument. Cherubic, fat little cherubs dancing all over the place on the legs of the piano. Incidentally, the piano itself is what we're about ready to talk about. The sounding board, and that is a source of what the piano, any piano, comes up with in terms of sound. It's a center, it's the core of the piano. This sounding board was added to the keyboard, to this piano, and listen carefully because this sounds rather strange. It was thought to be at least 2,200 years old, this piece of spruce, which was found in the area where King Solomon's temple lay at one time. And to this day, it is still thought by some to be part of one of the pillars of King Solomon's temple, a part of it. Carbon 14, which is very interesting, has never been affixed to this to associate the date which the age of this wood is. For some reason, it has been left alone by the carbon 14 method of, assuming what the age of a particular article is, namely an organic article. But it is, or it was, at least a 2,000-year-old piece of wood put into the piano, and over the years has been dealt with in order to keep that sounding board intact. Maybe that's why carbon 14 has never been adhered to, it because they figured, how old is this darn thing if it has so many different pieces of wood from so many areas chronologically? We have a few recordings made by some of the great artists, especially shortly after the piano was extricated and put into shape. During the Second World War, the Germans, the Nazis, who were very well known for taking treasures from all of the countries they occupied, and remember, they did occupy Italy sooner or later when the allies of Hitler, namely Italy and Japan, became one less when Italy surrendered, and Germany had to occupy Italy. So the Germans had a really interesting story with the Italian culture itself, one of which is the story of this piano. During the Battle of El Alamein in 1942, when Montgomery finally pushed Rommel westward and eventually out of Africa altogether, and was one of our first major victories in the Second World War, the Germans took this piano out of Italy and hid it in the El Alamein region of the desert. They put it underneath the sand. It was found. Miraculously, it had been encased by the Germans in plaster. To make a long story short, it did, and it was emerged. It was taken out of the sands, and eventually, it has been restored. What you're about to hear is a compendium of the reality of the age, whatever it is, of the sounding board, coupled with the visual beauty of this piano, which you can see. This recording was made in 1955 by a pianist whose name is Charles Rosen, who was one of the great 18th and 19th century scholars, and a wonderful, actually a world-class pianist. Listen to Charles Rosen, who was assigned to come in and for about a three-week period make some recordings on this piano. When you listen to it, ask yourself, is it a piano? When you hear it, after all that I've just said to you, you have to ask yourself, is it a lute? Is it a guitar? Is it a harp? Is it a harpsichord? But you'll never ask, is it a piano? Because it probably would not have come to you that it indeed is a piano. Listen to this thing and see for yourself. Hear for yourself.
Thank you, Les.
Okay.
Thank you.
actually, what we're hearing is a recording that I was going to talk about after the one that we were supposed to hear, which we will hear in just a few minutes. This was by Charles Rosen, and this was in 1955. This is the double keyboard, and I apologize for this, but there was a little mess up about the rotation of what we were about to hear. What you just heard is a piece done on a double keyboard, which was invented by a Hungarian inventor by the name of Moore, M-O-O-R, Emanuel Moore, who died in 1931. And what he did was affix another keyboard above the normal keyboard of a piano. And what actually occurs is that, and there is a pedal that's attached to this, a fourth pedal. Most of the grand pianos, of course, have three pedals. The fourth pedal hooks the upper keyboard, this new keyboard, on, and therefore both keyboards are being played. And it's the only double keyboard piano in existence right now. It's supposed to sort of replicate the harpsichord, which before the piano had a double keyboard much of the time. What's amazing about what was just heard is that the sound actually becomes bigger when the second keyboard is attached by use of this pedal. The sound is actually not louder, but bigger. It's hard to explain, but if we were to hear it once again, you could hear it. The first part of the piece is done on one keyboard, then the second part of the piece is done with the second keyboard coupled. Then the pianist returns and goes back to the single keyboard, and then goes back to the double keyboard, and that's what you just heard. So that's, unfortunately, we're going backwards on this thing right now. If you'd like, I can now have you hear the Siena piano, and that we've just talked about. So just listen to it and be amazed at what you're about to hear. Okay, what we're going to hear now, again, my apologies for the little mess, but hopefully you're enjoying what you're hearing. Now you're going to hear about one of the most amazing inventions that come out of the 20th century, and this happens to deal with music, not the development of a new bridge across a river. This device is called, and this is a German name, the Vorsetzer. Vorsetzer, which literally in German means sitter in front. That's sitter dash in dash front. This was invented in 1902 by a scientist. His name was Edwin Velte, W-E-L-T-E. He was not very happy with the player piano. As you know, the player piano can record and, of course, then plays, but it deals with hydraulic pressure. So everything based upon the player piano as we had known it and have known it is based upon driven air. He decided to deal with what we now call digital. Long before the word digital applies as it does today, he actually created an electronic circuit which on this particular piano roll that he developed would give you not only the sound of the pianist, the note that he played, which of course is the same thing as on the old, the piano player to begin with, the player piano, but also it would record the dynamic level, the phrasing, absolutely everything that the pianist recorded, so that when the recording is played back, it's as if the recorder is still there, he's alive and well. Now, just imagine, many of these roles were done in the first decade of the 20th century. When the pianists in Europe heard about this invention, they clamored. And to make a long story short, Velta was so overwhelmed by the response that he had to rent an empty castle on the Rhine River to accommodate the pianists who were flocking in, the great pianists of Europe, flocking in, many of whom actually recorded, and we have some of the recordings still today. Now, what you're going to hear is a recording made in 1906, believe it or not now, this goes back, 110 years, by a pianist by the name of Joseph Levine, who was one of the great post-19th century pianists, who was an incredible pianist. Let me tell you now what you're about to hear by way of the picture of the recording. The vorsetzer is not in itself the player. The vorsetzer is the receiver of the information. The roll is put into this vorsetzer, which looks sort of like a desk. But on the front of the desk, there are 88 rods matching each of the 88 notes on a piano. These rods were felt covered and were given the information from the roll within the instrument. This vorsetzer was then rolled up to a piano, and the vorsetzer would actually play the piano. Therefore, that vorsetzer was really the body of that pianist, for in this case, having been dead for the better part of a century, because the recording you're going to hear, even though it was made in 1906, is recording of its playing, this 1906 recording, on the 1962 West Coast piano of Artur Rubinstein. So this recording was made in 1962. Listen to piano involvement in 1906, which records every nook and cranny of what that pianist did. Can you imagine? You just heard something that's had such a sense of presence. Imagine you heard that pianist who recorded that which you just heard in 1906. The vorsetzer was an incredible instrument. By the way, the vorsetzer worked very simplistically through an electrical circuit created by the combination of carbon on one end of the circuit and mercury on the other, and this simple combination created this invention. Can you imagine? We're going to go back again to the very first piece you heard, just to fill in a little bit, perhaps for you to benefit from knowing a little more about that which you heard, because you heard something before I talked about it. And so I won't go over too much of it. It's just that double keyboard, which, by the way, the recording you heard was done at the University of Wisconsin. A double keyboard was made in 1929 by the Hungarian inventor and musician, Moore, M-O-O-R. This piano was purchased by the University of Wisconsin, and the artist in residence, his name was Gunnar Johansson, a wonderful pianist, was a champion of the double keyboard. And there are only three or four in existence today. This double keyboard happened to be made by Steinway, according to the specifications of Emanuel Moore, back in 1929. So in 1961, Gunnar Johansson is the one you're hearing playing this piece at the University of Wisconsin. Why don't we hear it one more time? And by the way, to listen intelligently to it is to know that this piece by Bach is a binary piece. That is, it's a two-part piece. The first part is played and then repeated again. The second part is played and repeated again. The first time in each section, the first keyboard is used. Then the repeat of each section is done on the double keyboard. And the amazing thing is, when you hear the piano suddenly becoming louder, it's not that it's getting louder, it's just getting bigger because the other keyboard is inculcated. Listen again and have fun.
Okay, it's WMFO, 9:43 in the morning now. Mike on the mic. Thank you so much, Les.
My pleasure.
And you got to do what's in your wheelhouse, the classical.
Finally.
Yeah, finally. It was just beautiful. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's not the last time.
No, always appreciated so much. All right. All right, so the other Hurwitz, Mark, over to my right. How you doing?
Good. I don't have a wheelhouse, by the way.
All right, but you do have a site called Boston's Hidden Rest. You did.
Yep.
Boston's Hidden Restaurants is your thing.
It is.
HiddenBoston.com.
That and this mic keeps falling down.
Well, I did that beforehand, so it didn't really bother you. Is it bothering you?
Everything bothers me.
All right. All right, so HiddenBoston.com.
Boston Restaurant Talk.
Yep.
I just finished, I don't know if you knew about Boston Uncommon.
I didn't. No.
It was Boston.com and the Globe had a... people were voting for their favorite restaurants in various categories. So I set up the categories for that, and there was a big party a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
And there were some winners, and some great, great restaurants won, including Villa Mexico, which is one of my favorites. Also, Boston Magazine, something's coming out soon. I can't talk about it, but yeah, it'll be out soon, and it'll be about restaurants because that's about all I know. I don't know anything else in life.
I could vouch for that.
Thank you very much.
What do you got for us today, Mark?
Well, before I get into restaurant reviews, this was a huge week for news stories. One of the biggest and one of the worst, in my opinion, is Verna's Donut Shop in Cambridge was seized by the state. And that place has been around for maybe 60 years, maybe more. And I think it was non-payment of rent, something like that. We're not entirely sure, but we don't know if it's going to reopen ever again. So, huge loss for people like donuts. So, they closed. More news is Flat Top Johnny's in Kendall Square. Big, big place for people who like to play pool. They were hit by a fire last summer, I think. And they finally announced an opening date. They're gonna finally reopen. And if you hold on one sec, I'll get you the opening date. I know I used to go to Flat Tops all the time. Actually, April 16th, which is a week from today, I think. So Flat Top Johnny's will be opening up really soon. Finally, one more quick news story is that the Corrib Pub in Brookline, which has been around forever, they closed. And that was one of the last of the old school restaurants and bars in Brookline. I don't think there really are any other old school bars left in the town. Maybe the closest one is O'Leary's or maybe Matt Murphy's, but it shut down last weekend, and I guess a new place is opening in the space, and it's going to become a gastropub, which isn't a bad thing. We all love our gastropubs, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So getting to reviews. Latest review is actually it's a breakfast place in Stoughton, and all the town or a lot of the towns as you head south of Boston along Route 24, the further south you go, the more Portuguese influence you get. Stoughton's not too far away, but there's definitely a Portuguese influence. A lot of Portuguese and Brazilian people live in Stoughton, and there's a place called the Corner Cafe, which is looks like a basic breakfast place, and they have a lot of basic breakfast dishes, but there's some Portuguese influence to them. So you get the chouriço, the sausage, Portuguese muffins, which are like, they look like English muffins, but they're sweet. And they have for lunch, they have some kind of a fisherman's stew, which I haven't had, but it sounds really good. So just a basic looking breakfast place in Stoughton, but really good, fresh ingredients, friendly people. And just a real hidden gem. Not too many people know about that place. Another one in Quincy is, this place has been around forever. They've kind of gone downhill, then up, then downhill, then up. I mean, sometimes it's a place that people don't really go to because they hear it's gone downhill, but it's back doing really well again, and it's great pizza. So Villa Rosa, it's near Furnace Brook Parkway and Adams Street, kind of close to East Milton Square. And they also have a lot of pasta dishes, veal, chicken, but their pizza is just, it's classic Italian thin crust style and great stuff. And a lot of people don't know about the place, even though it's been there forever. And I think that's about it.
You think or you're sure?
Well, I mean, I could keep talking forever, but kind of getting late here, so...
All right. Well, just an update for everybody. Destiny and Daddy will be here at about 10 minutes after 10. All right. Well, Mark, thank you. I always love hearing what you got.
Thank you.
Okay. Appreciate it. So I'm going to start the next set with some new music, as I like to do. This is a band called Nothing. I'm telling you, it's called Nothing.
So you're going to play Nothing?
Yeah. It's called Vertical Flowers at WMCO.